Sound Ideas, I'm Ryan Denham. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. McLean County Health Department reports another COVID-related death and 162 new cases over the weekend. The latest death is a man in his 60s who did not live in long-term care. His death brings the county's total since the start of the pandemic to 217. McLean County's testing positivity rate, though, dropped nearly a percentage point, down to 4.3%. There are 58 county residents now hospitalized with COVID-related complications. Bloomington Normal intensive care unit bed capacity improved over the weekend. Currently, 65% of ICU beds are in use, down more than 10 percentage points since Friday. About 9% of all hospital beds are available. Another 545 county residents are now isolating at home, with an additional 227 considered fully recovered. A Republican state senator representing Bloomington says he's gotten his first dose of the COVID vaccine. Christine Hassfield reports Republican lawmakers have waited for expanded eligibility to be vaccinated.
Jason Berrickman says he questioned Governor J.B. Pritzker's February decision to allow lawmakers to get vaccinated early.
I said that I wasn't going to get vaccinated in advance with that kind of carved out special exception for politicians. I instead just waited my turn, and now that my turn is up, we gladly went and got the vaccine. My wife and I gladly did.
Berrickman says the decision of whether or not to get the vaccine is a personal one. A Kaiser Family Foundation poll from March found around 30% of Republicans say they definitely won't get vaccinated. That number dropped significantly among independents and Democrats. I'm Christine Hatfield.
Illinois State University's president says he's proceeding with plans for a new engineering college despite academic Senate votes against it. The academic Senate supported the engineering college in the past, but last month it voted against taking some next steps, with many no voters citing ISU's protracted contract dispute with its graduate workers union. In a letter to the academic Senate chair, President Larry Dietz says he's moving ahead anyway. He says he'll seek authorization from the Board of Trustees to create the college. He says the recent votes were misguided and that opponents were conflating a short-term labor concern with a long-term strategic imperative. A rural McLean County police officer has pleaded no contest to official misconduct and computer tampering in a plea deal. Gelly Gordon was accused of improperly accessing the computer system used by McLean County law enforcement to check reports filed in another pending investigation against him. Gordon's plea deal allows him to maintain his innocence while acknowledging evidence exists to support a guilty plea. He must serve 30 months probation and can't work as a police officer again. The 54-year-old worked for the Shenandoah and Colfax police departments. And Central Illinois has its first female Eagle Scout. Celeste Saul of Dunlap was officially recognized during a Court of Honor ceremony in Peoria yesterday. Saul not only earned the 21 merit badges required to become an Eagle Scout, but also earned an additional 26 for a total of 47.
It was really awesome to be able to get it done and be a good example for other scouts who want to be able to get to Eagle and for other young girls who want to also achieve the Eagle rank too.
Saul became a scout in 2019 when the Boy Scouts opened up to girls and changed their name to Scouts BSA. Saul's Eagle Scout project was the trail reconstruction at Singing Woods Nature Preserve last fall. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Gina Barnhart.
It sounds funny, but I feel more independent because I can actually hear people and I have more confidence in that. It's such an empowering feeling.
Gina's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. It's been 3 months since former President Donald Trump left office. Even now, he continues to shape the modern Republican Party as it goes through an identity crisis. Jason Berrickman of Bloomington is floor leader for the Republicans in the state Senate. The party currently holds a super minority in both houses of the legislature. Christine Hatfield spoke with Berrickman about the direction Republicans are taking in Illinois.
I've never thought that a political party is about any one individual, no one person. I think parties and the Republican Party is more about a collection of shared values, you know, things like freedom and philosophical measures that are important to people who identify as Republicans, limited government, things of that nature. So I think the soul of the party is found, the foundation of it is based on those types of premises. And candidates who are competing for the hearts and minds of voters and ultimately the votes of voters are those who are going to appeal to those shared values and ultimately carry the banner for the party.
Are there signs that there's soul-searching happening in the party after last year's elections?
I think all political parties are constantly going through an evaluation and a, you know, analysis of themselves and setting priorities. You certainly see that reflected in the Democrat Party today, the national level. They're fighting among themselves on what the priorities of Pelosi's caucus ought to be in the House, as an example. So I think these are ongoing things that exist in all political parties.
Does it seem like the side of the Republican Party supporting Trump's brand of politics is making a long-term impact?
Here's what's making a long-term impact in the Republican Party. I think countless numbers of voters who identify as Republicans are frustrated with the size, growth, and control of our government. And as a result, they're speaking out. They're motivated to see in their government something that focuses on a different set of priorities than, you know, what they're seeing federally at this moment.
What do you think your constituents want to see when it comes to the quote-unquote GOP philosophy?
I serve in state government, and every day I talk to voters, Republicans in Central Illinois, who say they want to see us solve some of our state's problems. There are, I think, fundamental questions as to whether the Democrats who today have control of Illinois government, if those Democrats are willing to actually address some of these systemic problems. I look at what's on the table right now. For years, we've heard from leading Democrats, whether it be President Obama, countless individual Democrats who serve in the legislature today, of course, Governor Pritzker, that they are for an independent map-making process. Here we are in the year that it matters, the state's redistricting, and we can't get one Democrat in this state to support the independent maps proposal that we put forward. I think there's a hypocrisy there.
So what do you want to see as far as the Republican Party's philosophy goes?
Well, look, I've always been a vocal champion that individuals ought to be able to have the right to make their individual choices in life. They ought to be given more freedom, that our government ought to be limited. Those kind of philosophies are things that I've supported continuously with my voting record.
On the whole, where does it seem like this fight over the soul of the party is headed?
We're, heads down in Illinois right now, focused on the challenges that face our state and putting solutions forward to those. I think as you get through the governance side that we're in of Illinois government, and when you get into an election cycle, that's where more of the politics of it all come about. I think Republicans who are competing for Republican voters are going to step forward. They're going to put their name on a ballot, and they're going to compete for those votes. But that's a little ahead of where we're at the moment, because we're knee-deep in whether we're going to see a balanced budget, fair maps, ethical reforms, and some of the other issues that we need to address right away in our state.
That was Senate Republican Floor Leader Jason Berkman speaking with Christine Hatfield. Berkman says he wants his party to strive for bipartisanship with Democrats. He says bipartisan influence creates better public policy. This is Sound Ideas. Sound Ideas, I'm Ryan Denham. Illinois prisons have been hotbeds for infection through the pandemic. Because of that, most prison education programs have been shut down. IPR's Peter Medlin has more on how these programs are trying to stay in contact with their students with no internet, and why prison education lowers reincarceration more than almost anything else.
Over 10,000 people incarcerated in Illinois prisons have tested positive for COVID-19. That's one out of every three people serving time. And with incarcerated students cycling into quarantine, it's made it impossible for education services to continue in person. Rebecca Ginsburg is director of the Education Justice Project, which provides on-site programming and resources at the Danville Correctional Center through the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She says it's been really difficult knowing these students are at risk and being unable to have any real contact with them.
People have died in prisons across Illinois. I have colleagues who have lost used to COVID. Thank goodness we haven't to date lost any BJP students to COVID. But, you know, the pandemic isn't over yet.
Ginsburg says people might assume they could do online learning like other students. But there is none for prison education. Other programs have ceased completely, but the Education Justice Project was able to keep some courses going through paper correspondence. Danville Correctional Center allowed the EJP to drop off assignments along with blank paper to write on. So students would complete the work, and then 2 weeks later, project staff would pick them up, grade them, and drop them off 2 weeks after that. That means if students in prison have a question for their professor, it takes a month to hear back. They had to totally stop running correspondence courses in the fall due to case rates inside the prison, which Ginsburg says was the right call by the Department of Corrections.
We didn't want to do anything that jeopardized our students' well-being, whether that involved giving them additional contact with correctional officers, who were the main carriers of COVID, or requiring them to compromise their quarantine.
The project's been able to restart the correspondence courses this spring for their 75 students, and Ginsburg says there are more who hope to join post-pandemic, but there's already a wait list. There's also a lack of opportunity for incarcerated students outside of the Chicago area. Dr. Sharon Varallo is trying to address that opportunity gap. She's a professor at Augustana College and director of its new grant-funded prison education program, which she says will hopefully launch this summer depending on the pandemic. Along with a few colleagues, she's been helping teach at the East Moline Correctional Facility as part of the Graduated Release Initiative and as a volunteer. She first got involved with prison education work after a family member was charged with a violent crime they didn't commit, a charge that was later overturned. Through that arduous and expensive process, she learned how much education helps reduce reincarceration.
Criminal justice reform and higher ed in prison in particular are one of the very few areas in this country that have bipartisan support. I mean, every indicator is that it is worth it.
According to a study from the nonprofit research organization RAND, every $1 invested in prison education saves $5 in costs over the first 3 years after a person's release. Varallo taught a learning inquiry class at East Moline that she normally teaches first-year Augustana students. She says they were often surprised they could understand the same material as college students.
For the most part, they were not used to being treated as someone who was capable of learning.
Varallo and her colleagues are in the application process now and will select 10 students for the Augustana full credit degree program.
It will be hard, but those 10 people will set themselves up for a very hard experience. College is hard, but it's going to be one of the best things that they've ever done. It'll be winning the lottery.
Rebecca Ginsburg at the Education Justice Project says the pandemic also gave them the opportunity to innovate. The project used grant funds to create instructional videos available to anyone in the prison through institutional TV channels.
Many of the instructors are formerly incarcerated. They might have trouble getting clearance to teach within the prison itself, but now they can share their wisdom.
She says she hopes news attention of unsafe prison conditions during COVID, along with renewed conversations about racial justice, will push the expansion of prison education after the pandemic. I'm Peter Medlin.
Sound Ideas, I'm Ryan Denham. Illinois State University's cybersecurity program is maturing at just the right time. Its cybersecurity major launched about 3 years ago, and it's grown rapidly. It will soon move into a newly renovated space at ISU's Julian Hall. And the private sector is taking notice. State Farm recently funded a new endowed chair of cybersecurity. I spoke with the first person to hold that position, Dr. Sean Wu. He says it means a lot for him personally and to the program.
It's also tremendous. With the endowments, you can say actually we are finishing up our new facility in Julian Hall for the cybersecurity program. We are going to open this fall, and that provides the latest, you know, technology equipment, also the spacious facility for our cybersecurity program students. So our program has grown so fast in the past few years, actually. We already had more than 300 students. I think we are close to 350 students now in the program in just a few years. So that's amazing. So with this endowment, actually, in addition to, you know, facilities, technologies for the program, but also we have opportunities to provide our students with very unique education and research opportunities to work with faculty. One example is the Research and Education Center we are developing. We expect to have it up in operation sometime this year. So we can have the opportunities for our students to master students and undergraduate students. I think that's amazing.
One of the reasons that ISU created a cybersecurity major a few years ago was to meet the demand for that skill set out in the economy, out in the job market. What is your read on how much demand is out there right now for ISU's cybersecurity graduates?
Why actually our cybersecurity program has grown so fast? One of the main reasons is the need of the workforce of this type. Actually, if you pay attention to our national technology focus, you can say cybersecurity has stayed on the top five for about two decades, more than that. At the same time, of course, the workforce demand in the industry and the government agencies are very large. That's the main driving force or factor for the growth of the program. So I think we're on the right direction by creating this cybersecurity program a few years back.
So every day in the news, there is news of a data breach somewhere. The ones that I find most concerning are when there's a data breach impacting a public institution. I think of Heartland Community College here in Normal, for example, had a pretty disruptive data breach last fall. What are the challenges that public institutions face in trying to protect themselves in their systems and their users' data?
Basically, there is a low end, basically good side and bad side always develop in parallel. There is no once for all solution. That means once you have it and you will get it secured forever and no any worry. But so that's the first thing we have to pay attention. We should keep aware of possible attacks available and will come probably at any time. But the second part, I would say, I think we should actually have educated our users. I think that's very important. No matter the public universities you talk about, is Heartland Community College or our state university, public universities, or just general public users. I think the awareness of cybersecurity attacks exist in our lives, and we should educate ourselves or our users about how to have user operation or behavior every day to keep our digital facility, properties secured. For example, according to research study, many users use very weak passwords, even today, everywhere. So that gives the hackers, the easiest way to grab the system. And once any malicious user grab any regular system and can use that to initialize attack to the whole network where the, that computer connected to.
One of your areas of research is the intersection between cybersecurity and artificial intelligence, or AI, machine learning, whatever you want to call it. Can you give some examples of how AI could help, actually help protect systems and protect people?
For example, if we saw just enormous amount of traffic from this same single computer, so we raise our suspect on it. So we would say, probably something wrong. So we look into it. So we detect those things, but based on the knowledge we have or learned and built up. But in machine learning or AI, we can feed a lot of data of such kind of traffic data from the past, and then let the algorithms learn by themselves. And so they can learn some patterns from those traffics, but may not be some pattern we have. It's more than... it's beyond the identified patterns from the past that we already identified as human beings.
What about the flip side of that? Can't hackers use AI to make their attacks more sophisticated, more powerful, more lethal?
Yeah, exactly. So the bad side can also, exploit the technology too to utilize their attack. For example, they can, use AI to basically better like hide themselves. So it's hard to really identify who is the right one, who initiates the attacks.
Dr. Sean Wu is ISU's first State Farm Endowed Chair of Cybersecurity. This is Sound Ideas. The coronavirus pandemic gave student-athletes a lot of idle time over the past year as their sports were put on hold. But Josh Vogel, a senior at Central Catholic High School in Bloomington, has in some ways been more active than ever. In this edition of Beyond Sports, Vogel shares with Eric Stock the lessons he's learned from this pandemic-shortened season and how he plans to make the most of his time after school designing electric vehicles.
My name is Josh Vogel. I'm a senior at Central Catholic High School.
Josh Vogel competes in track, swimming, and bass fishing at Central Catholic. He's also a captain on the school's cross-country team. That's one of the few sports that went on this year without interruption. That enabled Vogel to take on another sport, football.
That was kind of nice for me, not going to lie, because I've always wanted to do football, and now football has moved into the fall or the spring. And since track got moved from the spring to the summer, I was able to do football along with swimming and cross-country and track. So it's been very hectic, but it's pretty nice for me that it worked out this way, though.
Well, more hectic than usual because all of these seasons are condensed into a couple of months. So how have you juggled that?
Yeah, it's definitely weird not being able to, like, have as good as bonds to your teammates, not able to, like, meet them as well as you would if you had more time in the season. But our coaches have really adapted. We've really adapted and overcame, like, all these roadblocks, and we've been practicing really hard in the short time we have, and even though seasons have been reduced, I'm sure every single person on the team is just glad to have one.
How hard has it been to participate in all these sports while trying to adhere to all of the protocols as well and wearing masks, which up until now in the spring they're going to relax a bit?
Yeah, masks and football is not very fun, but I mean, people are just happy to be playing. I know I have some friends on the basketball team who had to wear masks for basketball games, and they didn't even care. They were just happy to be out there playing. So I'm sure that everybody's just happy.
So tell us what happened your junior year where you were competing for the sectionals in cross country. An interesting story that shows teamwork in a sport that we may not think of as a team sport.
Yeah, I'm sure when you think of a teamwork sport, you don't think of cross country first. But I qualified individually at the meet, and I had the wrong bib number on, and turns out if you have the wrong bib number on, you get disqualified. But when I got disqualified, one of my teammates, Jack Morgan, made it over, like, instead of me. So that was still good that a teammate was able to go.
How did you decide to handle that? That would have been heartbreaking to think you have won and then to find out that you didn't on a technicality.
Yeah, it was sad at first. I was really upset, but then I realized I didn't want that one mistake to define who I was and show everybody that I was like a quitter or something. I wanted to bounce back and help my teammates and show what a leader and captain is supposed to do.
And how did Jack do after that?
He did really good. He had a good race. And yeah, I was just really proud of him.
So as you plan to move off to college to Southern Illinois University at Carbondale 4 years from now or 5 years from now, what do you look to be doing?
I want to be employed by an electric car manufacturer, I think. I know Rivian's in town. That'd be pretty cool to stay in here and be able to help up my community a bit. But yeah, I definitely want to do something that helps the environment.
So what do you see yourself doing?
I don't know. I think designing cars and like testing out motors would be super fun. It's something that not a lot of people get to do, and I think it's definitely going to be a really big industry soon, so it'd be really nice to help out with them.
Do you envision a day soon where we will all be driving electric cars to and from work and school?
Oh, yeah. It's going to happen soon. The sooner the better, I think, because right now gas is going way up, oil's all over the world, and it's going to run out eventually. Might as well start making the shift now.
That was Central Catholic senior Josh Vogel with Eric Stock. Vogel has a 4.0 grade point average and is a National Honor Society member. He's on the Scholastic Bowl team and participated in school plays and musicals before the pandemic. Vogel plans to study mechanical engineering at SIU in the fall. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Ryan Denham. We had story help today from Christine Hatfield, Eric Stock, and our friends at IPR. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT, and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.